Today when I drove here, come on out, come on to Beds Next Door. I'm Mark Levine. I'm sitting here with
Stokely Carmichael. I mean Garland Nixon.
He doesn't know who he is. Garland Nixon and with
Terry D. Kester, the Doctor of Democracy. Welcome, sir. Come on up and join us here at the Raucous Caucus.
We are just getting started.
Drinks are on Terry.
We're going to talk tonight about the Supreme Court, about what it does, about what it should do, and about what's going to happen now that really.
I thought we were talking about the Supremes.
No, that's Terry, that's down there.
And I did all that studying up on Diana Ross and her background.
We've got to figure out what we're going to do now that 90-year-old Justice John Paul Stevens is retiring. Frankly, I wish he'd stay another 23 years.
At least.
Because, you know, for a moderate Republican appointed by Republican Gerald Ford, he's now the head liberal on the court, which tells you something about where our United States Supreme Court is.
And where United States is.
So, we're the Raucous Caucus. We are here every Tuesday at 7 p.m., whether you're listening to 89.3 FM or you're with us here in Bend Next Door. You can see radio live if you'll just come on up to the mezzanine and join us.
And you can have food.
And drinks.
Really good food.
Yeah, but don't throw it at either me or Garland.
Right.
If you want to throw it at Terry.
Yeah, I'm hungry.
He's hungry.
Cheesecake.
So don't order anything with tomatoes in it because they stain the shirt so bad. I've had that problem.
You know, they've never thrown them at me, Garland.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the United States Supreme Court because I think the retirement of Justice John Paul Stevens gives us an indication of what a right-wing, radical, dare I say, yes, I'll say it, lawless court we have. When Justice Stevens was appointed by Gerald Ford, he was, I suppose still is, a moderate Republican appointed by a moderate Republican president, Gerald Ford.
He considers himself conservative. He said it. He said it just the other day.
Really? Still?
Yeah, still.
There was a time in this country when that actually was conservatism
was. That's my point.
Oddly enough.
In 1975, when he was chosen by Gerald Ford, a president who, according to Rush Limbaugh, is a Marxist, I suppose, a raving
Nixon was
liberal.
A Marxist. He wanted health care.
Nixon started the Environmental Protection Agency.
Yeah.
He actually cared about the environment.
Universal health care.
Nixon. Yes, he was.
He did. He proposed it. So the problem is not with Justice Stevens.
No.
Or even Gerald Ford, for that matter, though he was certainly a Republican. The problem is that the court has moved far, far, far to the right ever since Justice Stevens was appointed. When he was appointed, he was on the right side of the court. Now he is the leader of the liberal branch, because after Justice Stevens came Scalia.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Kennedy. And Rehnquist was the Chief Justice.
He's been replaced by Chief Justice Roberts
and Alito. And, you know, there's no real need to mention Clarence Thomas. Clarence Thomas is Scalia's second vote.
Teabag Thomas, I call him.
He's Scalia's second vote. He's the reason Scalia gets two votes on the court while every other nominee gets one. I was actually in law school when Clarence Thomas was chosen and couldn't believe that they chose someone who was actually rated not qualified. Someone is rated not. There are three stages that the ABA can rate you. One is well qualified. Every other justice on the Supreme Court has always been well qualified. One is just qualified. And then there's
Thomas.
Not qualified.
You want to hear something interesting about Clarence Thomas?
Go ahead.
When there was the whole business going on about, you know, he was trying to say that it was racist because people were bringing up things about his past. And oddly enough, there were a lot of people in the African-American community who were kind of buying into it, saying, they're trying to blah, blah, blah. And there was a lone voice in the dark back then, me, saying, you need to look at this guy's history.
You were that voice.
Before you're so quick to jump into his favor, you need to figure out what this guy
is. And now you're the most conservative guy on this show. That's what's really hurt.
That's what's really bad.
I'm the lone voice.
I'm here with Lenin, Stalin, and Nixon. How strange.
I remember being at Yale Law School, which, by the way, Clarence Thomas attended Yale Law School along with Nita Hill.
Yeah. And
we knew all the scuttlebutt about Clarence Thomas. And yes, by the way, and I can confirm this here, he did run Dirty Movies. I don't know what that means. Dirty Movies in the basement. See, that's where the met came from.
Well, so the guy wasn't all bad, huh?
Dirty Movies in the basement of Yale Law School. He called it the First Amendment movies. And while I fully support everyone's right to pornography, the fact that later on he called...
Everyone's?
Well, not children.
Oh, okay. Just checking.
But while adults have the right to get whatever pornography they want. But the thing was is that when Anita Hill told the truth about him, he called it a high-tech lynching. And what I remember back at Yale Law School is it was the last days of Thurgood Marshall, who's always been one of my heroes. I mean, may he rest in peace. He's someone who truly knew not only how to be a really, really good lawyer. I mean, I think Brown versus Board of Education, it's hard to imagine it without Thurgood Marshall, but also a really good justice of the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. As a lawyer, as a practicing trial lawyer, one of the nice things about Justice Marshall's opinions, they were easy to read. They were clear.
Yeah.
He laid out bright line standards. He was a lawyer's lawyer. He was really good.
You wouldn't say that because you've been a practicing trial lawyer, would you, Mark?
Yeah, and well, that's my point. Stevens' writings are very clear.
They're very, very clear.
Yeah.
And I remember...
And Thomas's writings are in crayon, so they're not all that clear.
No, Thomas is Scalia's second vote. He just concurs with Justice Scalia.
Right. But what he said, kind of.
I remember we did a little we called it the Yale Law Review, R-E-V-U-E. We did a little review at the end of law school year, sort of a singing and dancing, you know, amateur actors, to be sure.
Oh, I wish I'd been there
for that, yes,
Mark.
We did. I remember
we
did this thing. We did, and you have to be a Benz to see the hand motions. We did, hang on, Thurgood, hang on. And we, like, put our arms down like he was barely, because he was barely alive. And we're like, stay on, live, just till we get a Democratic president. And God knows he tried. He tried. He tried to survive. Unfortunately, the man didn't. And, of course, we got Clarence Thomas in his place, which is to think that
which
such...
Which is an insult.
Well,
which is absolutely
a great
an insult.
Man, such a great man's shoes, yep. Filled by such a... I don't know what to say. But my point and what I want to talk about this whole hour, not just... We'll talk about Justice Stevens and his retirement and the replacements and all that, but really about the United States Supreme Court and what role it plays. Because I got to tell you, Americans are always talking about the President of the United States, no matter who it is. Obama, Bush, Clinton,
you name it.
They're also talking about Congress. Usually they're marching on Congress, railing on Congress. But I don't know about you folks. Whenever I go to the steps of the United States Supreme Court, the one that little building behind Congress, I rarely see anybody march on the Supreme Court. I mean, tell me, I want to know both of you, if you agree with me, that the Supreme Court is the least watched branch of government, the least marched on, the least criticized. Do you agree, Terry?
Well, the court system in general, and that's part of the problem. I mean, there's a wonderful article, and you and I referred to it before the show, and people should be aware of it because Americans are not aware of what's going on. It was by Perlstein in last Friday's Washington Post, and that's, you know, part of the reason, a big part of the reason, is not just the Supreme Court. Part of the big reason the United States of America is not working is even if Congress gets around to passing a regulation, it is always, almost always, defeated by the district court in Washington, D.C.
The Court of Appeals.
The Court of Appeals.
District Court's one lower. You mean the Court of Appeals.
And, I mean, it's just on and on. I mean, laws like the coal miners, the 29 coal miners, if the regulations had been enforced, if they hadn't been wrapped up in court and lawsuits continually for years, that mine would have been safe. So that's a perfect example of how the district courts, or the Court of Appeals, and the courts throughout the country are failing us. And they really are. And partly the same reason, again, is, frankly, money. Something like 89% of all judges in the states, on the state level, are elected. And the money flow to them is not restricted.
Right.
Compared to
so big money buys
big money
buys
is buying justice.
Justice
again. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Garland, do you agree that the courts are the least watched branch, and maybe they need to be watched on a little bit more by the American people?
Yeah, and it's interesting because, as you know, I teach criminal justice, and
how's it coming?
It's rough. It's rough when you're dealing with 19-year-olds these days.
No, I meant criminal justice. Is there any?
Most of our justices couldn't be considered criminal
in
this country.
Okay, thank you. That's what I thought.
I think that works out.
Thank you.
But at any rate...
Certainly the ones in Bush v. Gore.
Right. When I start talking about to my students about the Warren Court versus the Burger Court, explaining to them the difference in how the Supreme Court... The difference that Supreme Court makes in our lives based on how they... interpret the Bill of Rights. They sit there like deer in the headlights.
They don't even know what the Bill of Rights is. If
I talk to them about their rights, if the police stop them and they're searching their car for marijuana, let me tell you, they're taking notes.
Uh-huh.
You know, they're wide-eyed. They look like owls. Their eyes are like 50-cent pieces. But when I start talking about the difference that the court makes in our lives just by how they interpret the Bill of Rights and our right to privacy and our rights against unreasonable search and seizure...
And the Second Amendment.
Right. They get wide-eyed and they don't realize how important that is.
You know, Garland, it's interesting when you mentioned the Warren Court, the Burger Court. For the last, 30, 40 years, conservatives have run against the court, the liberal court, judicial activist court, because they think of, really, Brown versus Board of Education. They say, oh, my God, how dare the court, you know, insist that the 14th Amendment be applied and people be treated equally.
Who wants black people in our schools, for God's sake?
And I got to tell you, a lot of racists, shall I say, have been arguing against Brown versus Board of Education. I mean, Goldwater ran in 1964 against the court because he didn't think that you could force civil rights down the throats of the American people and so forth. Now, this argument about judicial activism, they're still making it. I heard Mitch McConnell just the other day say he wants a judge that has judicial restraint. And here's the irony.
Here's the most activist court we've
in
had
American
in decades.
History.
Yes.
If you look at
and
the so-called liberal justices, Stevens and Ginsburg and Breyer and Souter and now Sotomayor, they're the ones that are respecting the elected branches, saying, okay, Congress said it, well, we got to follow it. If you want the branches overturning laws right and left, you want the most activist judges in American history, It's this court.
And in terms of that, most of the columnists I have read that I respect have said no matter who is appointed, the court is going to continue its move to the right. And you may owe me that $2 back. Because by the time the health care bill gets, it's going to be challenged every which way you can think of. Every single aspect of it is going to be challenged. It's going to be tied up in courts for another two decades. I will die without getting national health care. I have no
probably
doubt.
Of a treatable disease because probably you don't have health care coverage.
Also, just out of precaution, just start in terms of money. Did you know you can rent the Supreme Court building?
And you can actually rent a justice. You can actually rent a justice, too,
from what
I understand.
No, that's true. I used to produce Horatio Alger Awards.
Well, it must be when it's at a session.
Yeah, well, yeah, okay, usually. Right. Yeah, well, you know, until
we can do our show from the.
But you can rent.
Let's do our show in the Supreme Court. Yeah. What do you think?
You can rent it. We used to rent it at Horatio Alger Society. You know, that's where I met Clarence Thomas, as a matter of fact.
You met Clarence Thomas?
I met him indeed.
What did you say to Clarence Thomas?
Hi, Clarence, stand over here. Don't move. The camera's got you. You're covered. Forget about
that's
it.
That's all you
speak
said.
Speak up. Use the microphone,
you didn't say,
Clarence.
How
don't
could
touch
you,
the microphone.
You didn't say to him, how could you choose Bush when America voted for Gore? Why
no,
did you say
no,
that to
but
Terry?
I did stand.
Terry, you're usually very strong and strident. Why didn't you take down Clarence Thomas?
During these sessions, I actually stood at a urinal with Ted Turner.
TMI.
Yeah, with Ted Turner and discussed the world population problem. Now, I tried.
Can you believe that, Garland?
I tried.
That's
had
an interesting
chance.
Place to discuss that. But I'll just leave that alone.
But I do want you to know, it was a shock to me because I was relatively new into Washington and coming back at that time and doing these large special events and extravaganzas. And I get this big job with Horatio Alger Awards. And I say, where's our first, you know, opening ceremony? And they say, the Supreme Court. And I rented harpist and everything else to place in the court. And we used the Supreme Court for our event for the richest people in the United States.
You know the funny thing about activism? And that is, number one, it's the subjective terms. And what kills me is that...
You mean judicial activism.
Yeah, judicial activism. Yeah. And what kills me is, you hear the right, activism simply means a left-leaning decision. That's if any judge who
supports the ideals of the Democratic Party.
Right, then that's an activist judge. If you are far to the right and you go along with them, then you're a strict constitutionalist. And I never understood that, because if you're a strict constitutionalist, there was nothing in the Constitution about I got one right here, Mark.
I
have a copy right here. And I didn't see anything in here about an Air
Treat
Force.
Treat that with respect.
It says the Army. It says, excuse me, it says we'll have an Army, we'll have a Navy. But it didn't say, of course, then planes
more
hadn't been invented.
More importantly than
so
that.
So therefore, if you're a strict constitutionalist, we got to do away with the Air Force.
I want to give three activist decisions. I will be quick. The first and most annoying, the one that brought me to Washington, the one that took me out of my highly paid trial lawyer job and brought me to my very low paid congressional attorney job, was, of course, the decision in Bush v. Gore. I did not believe, and Terry would have told me this, but I would not have believed him if he told me that the United States Supreme Court was actually going to overrule the American people and choose a president of the United States. I didn't think that was possible in America. I knew in some Latin American tin pot dictatorship. I knew China. You know, I knew that
Iran.
North Korea, Iran. Sure, all of that happens there. But not in my country, not in America. And I remember following that case very closely.
And you know who wrote the minority opinion?
Well, Justice Stevens.
Justice Stevens.
And what Justice Stevens said in that opinion was... Because at that time they hadn't counted the votes, because remember Stephen...
Why count the votes? Well, it's America. Why would you count the votes?
Well, that's exactly what Scalia wrote.
I know.
Scalia wrote on December 9th, 2000, in an opinion that will live in infamy, he wrote, if you count the votes now, it will damage the legitimacy of Bush's claim to be president.
Yeah, obviously, because he doesn't have enough.
And I remember thinking, you know what? If you count the votes, it damages the legitimacy of my claim to be president.
Right.
Maybe I won if you don't count the votes. Why not install
Maybe
me?
Maybe you did.
Maybe I did. I don't know. But the point is that if you don't count the votes, anyone can win. And that was shocking. And then, of course, came December 12th, a day that will live in infamy, when Bush v. Gore was decided. And Justice Stevens wrote at that time, and he's a very courtly man, he's a very kind man, but he wrote, because they hadn't counted the votes yet, he said, "We may not know who won the election of 2000, but we know who lost, and that is the nation's belief that justice is impartial."
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He made it very clear that the opinion in Bush v. Gore was not some, reasonable consideration of law based on some ambiguity.
No.
This was five individuals ramming their opinion down the throats of 300 million Americans.
And that was without that right wing that we have now, Roberts, as
That's
chief
right.
judge.
Or Alito. For
or,
that
or Alito, right.
Well, let me throw this in real quick. We're right here at Ben's next door. There's still plenty of room. If you want to get here, 1213 U Street, come on down, check out the show. We're having a lot of fun. We've got you can come here. We've got a mic sitting here. You can ask questions and be part of the show.
And you can run for the Supreme Court, because now it's basically going to be an elected office anyway. The Senate pretends it's not, but it basically is. And if all the corporations, trust me, if all the corporations get behind all the senators, now that they can give any amount of money they want to running a campaign supporting the game, they will not let any liberal or even centrist justice be approved.
Which brings me to my next point.
Certainly not before the election.
So Bush v. Gore brought me to Washington. The Congressional Black Caucus hired me to write the brief challenging the Florida electors. We did the best we could, and I decided that my country needed my help, and that's why I'm here. But then the thing that Terry mentioned, of course, is the most recent extreme case of judicial activism. I'm sitting here with a constitution in my hands, and nowhere in this document, anywhere, I assure you, look carefully, nowhere in this in this constitution, nowhere in the Declaration of Independence will you ever see the word corporation. It's not in here.
Nope.
They're not protected by the Bill of Rights. They're not protected by the Constitution.
Nope.
They're not in the Declaration of Independence. In fact, our founding fathers were very suspicious of corporations, and they were right. Well, now, five so-called justices of our Supreme Court, five individuals, have ruled recently, as certainly Terry and Garland know, I hope everyone listening to my voice knows as well, that corporations have all the constitutional rights that people have because they really are people.
Hey, and they believe that you know, that has
they
had
have First
such
Amendment rights. They could spend as much as they want in campaigns. And Exxon's profits last year are more than every American in the whole United States spent on the presidential race.
It has pervaded our entire justice system. It's not just the Supreme Court. It just took the Supreme Court a bit longer. I remember fighting an issue regarding my neighborhood that we live in at Alexandria and the city council. And it was about Coca-Cola Company, as a matter of fact. And we were told right there that Coca-Cola, as a corporate citizen, had at least as much rights as we did.
It's amazing.
The neighborhood association.
I said this on my radio show yesterday. I said, look, let's compare dogs to corporations. Dogs.
That's rude.
Wait a minute. It's rude to the dogs, I know. Dogs can roll over, and so can people, but corporations can't.
Nope.
Dogs can bark. People can bark. They can. Corporations can't. Yeah. Dogs sleep.
Well, no, wait a minute. You're misunderstanding here, Mark. Corporations actually have more rights than we do as citizens.
I understand they do, but my point is this. My point is dogs should have more rights than corporations because they are more like people, and people are the only people protected in the Constitution. So if you're going to give corporations the right to control our elected officials, well, we should at least give that right to dogs.
And what do you think the East India Tea Company is, going back to the Revolution, and was a corporation?
Right.
And what were all the problems with the trade that were keeping the Americans basically from making any economic progress? Corporations.
Let me give Garland a chance here. I know he wants to.
Go ahead, Garland. Say something. Quick.
You guys lost me here with all this corporation stuff. No, as I always say, all jokes aside, it's at the rate we're going, it's just a matter of time before a corporation can run for office as an individual.
You know they're doing that?
Why shouldn't they?
They're doing that. There's a public relations corporation that is actually running for office. I forget its name. I don't know if either of you remember.
No, I don't remember it.
But I read the article about it because they said if corporations have all the rights that humans do, then they should be able to run for office.
Then can they contribute to themselves? All they want, right?
They have more rights. You've got to understand
they do have more rights. They don't go to prison. I would love to see Massey Energy Corporation.
Check about accountability with AIG or Goldman Sachs.
Or Massey Energy Corporation, which killed 29 innocent coal miners just a few weeks ago. They don't go to jail. And you know what? They're immortal. We all die.
And check the tax code. You think you got problems? Boy, they have so many more advantages than you and I have as citizens.
They certainly
have far more.
And most important of all, they can give unlimited money to politicians. Now, there's a big difference between humans and corporations. Here's the difference. When I give money to a politician, it comes out of my pocket. But when corporations give money to politicians,
it comes out of my pocket. Yeah.
No, it does. And here's a great example. Right. Look at Exxon, which made $42 billion last year.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is that all?
And remember, that's 10 times the amount that every American spent on the presidential election of 2008.
Only 42.
On Obama, on McCain, on Clinton, everybody, we spent about $2 billion. So Exxon's got us covered 20 times. When I go and I fill up gas in my tank and I give Exxon dollars, it's not because I support tax credits for oil companies. Believe it or not,
really?
It's not because...
Doesn't it say that on the pump?
No, it's not because I support the Republican Party. It's not because I support Glenn Beck.
But you don't get the vote who that money goes to?
I'm doing it, crazy enough, just because I want my car to go.
Yeah.
And but Exxon believes that any money you give them to make your cars go, they can spend it, not just Exxon, every corporation. You go to McDonald's, it's not for the burgers. It's because you support the candidates that the CEO of McDonald's wants you to support. That's obvious.
But here's the difference. There's a limit on how much I can give.
Only $2,000.
We're limited on how much we can give.
Well, you're just a citizan.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you're irrelevant.
Well, Exxon can give all $42 billion if they want. You
know, I want to get back to one point, though, about activism. I mean, it's a ridiculous concept to begin with because there's not a single law or ruling that can be passed that doesn't have consequence.
Right.
I mean, no matter...
Well, I don't think that's what they mean.
Oh, no.
Judicial activism, as I read it, is going beyond the text of the Constitution. That's that... And telling
the elected representatives
that they don't have power.
No matter what the ruling is, no matter what the decision is, no matter what the law is, it's all... The point is, Congress is the one, only one that's supposed to have any active, consequential result on our behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Now the Supreme Court has taken over that almost entirely. And in fact, even if you deal with a lot of poverty issues, which I've been dealing with over the last few years and talking to various associations, they've given up, you know, on the voters, basically. The only process that they have to challenge some of the rules and laws that disadvantage people are through the courts.
Yeah, mm-hmm. the ACLU.
The system has become totally imbalanced in terms of our social needs on who and where we're going for social progress, because Congress does not do its job, so we try to get Congress to without or the courts to without knowing that the courts are caught in the same corporate cesspool.
Well,
let me go. I'll tell you.
Terry left me thinking there, man. The hamster was running on the wheel there after that one, Terry.
That was deep.
I want to give a case of clear judicial activism. It happened just last year. It has to do with the Second Amendment, every conservative's favorite amendment.
The Second Amendment rally on the 19th.
Now,
to
be clear, the democratically elected parts of government, Congress and the president, when it's not chosen by the Supreme Court, we actually get to elect it through the Electoral College. That they normally should make the laws. And the only time the Supreme Court is supposed to overturn their laws
is when
it violates the Constitution. And, you know, I'm okay with that as a general matter. Because, for example, civil rights, Brown versus Board of Education.
Right.
You know, Alabama would never have given equal rights to black people if they hadn't really been forced to by the Supreme Court and by Congress with the Civil Rights Act and so forth. But the question is, when does the Constitution apply? Well, obviously it applies equal protection under the laws. But let's read the Second Amendment here. And I'm going to read the whole amendment, not just the part that Scalia likes.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, a well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So this is very, very clear. You cannot stop a well-regulated militia from having arms so that the people can protect their security. That's what the Second Amendment says. Now, Scalia believes that you can ignore the first 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 words. They're meaningless. He decides that those 14 words are meaningless, and he says the right of the people to keep and bear arms should not be infringed, but that's not what's in this document.
Mm-hmm.
And all I want in a Supreme Court justice is someone who respects the actual words in this document rather than making junk up, rather than claiming that corporations are here when they're not, rather than claiming that militias are not here when they are. If they just respected this document, that's my notion of judicial restraint.
Right. Well, one of the things we're looking at here, too, is pretty much any decision, the position that the right takes, that the decisions that are made that are left-leaning are judicial activism. pretty much any decision that's made by the Supreme Court is going to be an interpretation of something that's in it. It's going to be in a manner, it's going to be beyond and above the text of what's in the Constitution, because if that weren't needed, then it would have already been in the Constitution. So the argument that we're dealing with, the thing that I don't like is that so much of the media and so many people are accepting the argument of judicial activism as though that it's a valid premise. That they're actually saying, well, you know, the Republicans are saying that as long as it's something that someone who's not a judicial activist, then they'll go along with it, as though that's a valid premise in the first place.
Well, let me ask,
it's garbage.
Here's my question for you, Terry. I think that liberals need to reclaim the Constitution, reclaim the rule of law, reclaim, if you want, even the term strict constructionist, and say, we believe in the rule of law, we believe in restraint, and we're tired of activist judges. That's right, we need to say that. We are tired of activist judges deciding our president, giving corporations ultimate power, and reading out words that are clearly in the Constitution. Shouldn't we grab that mantle, Terry?
Well, we should grab that mantle. We should actually start, I mean, an impeachment process. I mean, we really honestly should. Why do we sit on our butts? The only way we can deal with the court as citizens or Congress is through impeachment. Is there any reason not to be pushing for that? They pushed upon it for Warren for decades. You know, there's
Well, you're a take-it-to-streets kind of guy.
Yeah,
let me ask you this. Everyone is marching on the Capitol. It happens every day.
Yep.
People go to the White House and challenge the president every day. Why is it, you, grassroots activist, how can we never see people on the steps of the Supreme Court building? It's too empty.
You know, part of this is because of that damn word supreme.
Yeah, really?
It's psychological?
You know, psychologically. You know, this is this wonderful court with these nine men. By the way, the number nine
Seven men, two women, please.
Yeah, the nine judges. That's not in the Constitution either. You know, that number
That's
isn't
true.
There at all. But anyway, they're sitting there in their black robes, and we have this ideal, this myth that infallibility is inside that chamber.
Is the Pope part of the Supreme
Court? Pope,
the
Pope is there. He's back behind.
Oh, my God. Are they abusing children?
Yep. No.
Okay. See, another part of it is...
I was worried there for a minute.
Another part of it is the lack of understanding. Sadly enough, so few people in this country even understand how our government works.
Yeah.
Most people do not understand.
Most people don't know the three branches.
You're right.
That's true. Most people believe it's Congress, presidency, and the military.
You're right.
Really?
The majority.
Yeah. Take it from a person who,
which may be true.
Who teaches. You'd be surprised talking to college students what they believe.
Well, you know,
that's
if
people understood the significance of Supreme Court decisions and how they go about, they would be taking more actions prior to some of these important decisions to try to influence someone, God knows who, the people who probably really own the Supreme Court justices, per se.
See, and I think that's what upset me most about Bush v. Gore. I knew, as a constitutional lawyer, although I don't think you had to be a constitutional lawyer to know this, but I certainly knew, I read the opinion carefully, I searched for any law in there. I did. I looked hard. I tried to find some precedent, some law, some crazy, convoluted, logical way, and there's nothing in the opinion.
No.
The opinion says, we will not settle time limit on democracy. The time limit for democracy is December 12th at midnight. We will count every vote. We are not going to count the votes. We believe in equal protection of the law, but not in this case. And it even said, and this is my favorite part of the opinion, my favorite Orwellian part, do not cite this opinion as precedent. It is crap. That's what they said.
They didn't say crap.
No, here's what they said. They said, this opinion shall be limited to the present circumstances and shall not be cited as future law, because in future we may have to rule against...
Well, you know,
and a Democrat could be ahead.
A Democrat could be ahead, so we'll have to reverse this.
I called it the Gore exception to the rule of law. And that's what it was. And I went around saying, the emperor has no clothes. It's a coup d'etat. Take to the streets. The Supreme Court is stealing our democracy. And I think people yawned.
Well, it's Supreme Court. It's supreme.
I guess. I don't think they realized that the emperor had no clothes. But that's exactly why I came to Washington. We're going to have to take a break soon enough. We want to encourage everyone, if you are in the neighborhood, if you're stuck in traffic in the rain, come on down to Beds Next Door. Come up to the mezzanine, 1213 U Street. You can join us. You can challenge us. You can ask us questions.
You can have cheesecake.
You can have cheesecake.
You can buy us drinks.
You can buy us
drinks.
No,
we can't take us right out.
No. You can definitely buy us drinks. Come on down. Check us out. Challenge us. This is what it's all about. And are we about ready for our break? We are ready. We'll be right back.
It's blues time. This cousin Frank, and yeah, baby. It's blues time. Blues, blues, blues all day. All day Wednesday. Well, all afternoon anyway. 12 to 6. That's 12 to 6. Now, we got some special guests. Steve Hoffman going to be here. We got surprise guests. We got... What, tell them, sir.
Hey, I'm going to be there. I'm telling Janice Brown I'll be there.
Anybody else? Let me see.
Yeah, Minnie Driver's going to be there.
Yeah, no, that's Minnie Drive. Mini Drive, it's the PFW Mini Drive.
Because it's all about money.
No, Flash, get on out of here. It ain't about the money, it's about the station. Take money to run the station, and we're having a Blues Mini Drive all day Wednesday to raise funds for WPFW. That's Wednesday, April 14th, 12 noon to 6, the PFW Blues All Day Mini Drive.
Still thought it was Mini Drive.
Welcome back to the Raucous Caucus, coming at you live from Ben's next door to Ben's Chili Bowl, 1213 U Street. We're talking about the Supreme Court. Now, here's my fear. Now, the way the Supreme Court works is if the Chief Justice wants to write the opinion and he's in the majority, he can do that. If he is not in the majority, then the most senior justice on the court gets to write it. Or decide who gets to write it.
Right.
And for the last 16 years, it's been Justice Stevens. Mm-hmm. And usually, if he agrees with Justice Roberts, everybody agrees.
But who's it going to be now if it's not
Roberts? It's going to be Justice Scalia.
Oh, no. Gosh. Leave the country. Get on the boat. Right
Antonin
now.
Scalia.
You'll be thrown out if you don't.
It's going to be the most senior member of the court. But Terry, no, wait a minute. Scalia. No, hold on. Before you start crying in the mic and committing harikiri. Scalia will usually agree with Roberts.
Of course he will.
And because he will, he won't be exercising the power as senior justice near as much. So do you know who will be the senior liberal, quote unquote, on the court? Anthony Kennedy. The man who wrote Citizens United. The man who wrote
Get
that corporations are people.
Quick.
A man who is one of the five who joined Bush v. Gore decision. If there's ever a case where the liberals win, where there are four liberals, and they get one more, it's going to have to be Kennedy because he's the only one that ever even occasionally votes with the liberals. He's going to get to write those decisions. So even the ones we win.
And my wife just came up to me and said, what's this with the impeachment? Are you kidding? What choice do we have?
Terry, you're a dreamer. I'm not sure how you're going to get 67 votes in the Senate to impeach a Supreme Court justice.
I don't know.
Threats and intimidation? I don't know.
But yeah.
Well, speaking of threats and intimidation, I want to know.
Marching on the Supreme Court.
I want to encourage people to march on the Supreme Court. You know, I'll tell you something. People don't even visit the Supreme Court. I got to tell you something. You go to the White House, you're not going to see President Obama. I'm sorry, unless you're really, really lucky.
Nope.
If you go into Congress,
you might see
them milling around downstairs. You got to get a pass and so
Just
forth.
Just follow the money, you'll find them.
There's 535. You're not going to see them all. You could see all nine members of the Supreme Court any day during session. Did you know that? You just stand in line. You go through the metal detector. And usually there's not even a line. Usually you get in. You get to sit for 10 minutes. And you can actually see them at work. I do this all the time. And I don't understand why other people don't want to watch their government at work.
They've been doing, I don't want to see it. I'd rather not look. You know?
Well, you could always cry.
Looking at a train wreck with bodies all over the place.
You could cry. You could grimace.
Barf, I'd probably, toss my cookies as soon as they made a...
you could vomit. Yeah, absolutely. There you go.
Likelihood of that happening.
This really is a serious point, and I'm glad you're bringing it up, because we have got to take an activist position towards the courts
absolutely.
As well.
Yes.
I mean, grassroots activist position.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean... I really encourage you again to go back to this article by Stephen Pearlstein a week ago Friday. I mean, these judges, Brett Kavanaugh, Lawrence Silberman, and Stephen Williams,
all
Republican appointees.
Silberman's the worst.
They really should be writing letters to them saying, look, why are you destroying what Congress intends in terms of regulations to protect the American people? And they are the ones that primarily are doing this, although the Democrats are doing it as well, the Democratic judges as well. But you should
not
be involved.
So not as much.
In this court they are. But you should be involved with what's happening in the courts, because it's just as much your part of the government as anything else. And
well,
we've been ignoring it for years.
And, you know, when I think about what could have happened if McCain had been president and Justice Stevens is gone, we'd have a right-wing court for two generations. You know, people think about this. It's not just when you appoint a justice, it's not just for that generation, that justice's life. It's usually for several generations. And the reason is clear. Stevens made sure that he was leaving while Obama was president. Now, thank God he lived to age 90, because I remember being nervous he was going to die while Bush was president. He made it, right? We know that.
Thank heavens for modern medicine.
We know that that Justice O'Connor quit while Bush was president. We know that Souter quit while Obama was president. It's not just their legacy, but they're very careful when they're quitting. Are you noticing
that? Right, right. Yeah.
They're very careful to make sure that presidents of their ideology go on. So we have to keep electing Democratic presidents to outlast Justice Scalia. It's that simple.
You know,
otherwise, this court will always be a far right-wing court where the moderate conservative Justice Stevens runs the liberal branch. It's hard to focus on how right-wing and radical this court is.
You know, I guarantee you that Obama will not be promoting a progressive or a liberal justice, because he knows he'll never get it through the Senate.
I disagree with you.
Well, we'll find out.
If he does it, it'll be a test case. Like
Sotomayor is a liberal. She's not far left, but she's a liberal.
Yeah, she's moderate. He might promote somebody progressive, knowing that that'll be defeated, so that they can pressure more for the second time. Politics are going to rule, but there will not be a progressive or liberal justice that ever passes through the Senate.
One of the points Mark made was very, very important, because many times there'll be the discussion as to some people feel that the Democratic Party and the Republican Party are both co-opted by, you know, corporations or whatever, or people have different feelings about that, about the parties or similarities or what have you. And we hear those arguments and we discuss them and we have them in our callers and everything. Okay. But one thing is fairly obvious. If you have a Democratic president, you're not going to get the same type of Supreme
Court.
You're
not going to get Justice Scalia. That's
no
for
other
sure.
reason.
No,
I don't care if Mickey Mouse is running as a Democrat. You're better off to put Mickey Mouse in as a Democrat simply for the purposes of the Supreme Court and what that's going to mean for us in the long run. Now, I fear we discuss it and we let it go to the side, but we still have no idea how this decision that allows the corporations to contribute unlimited
money, we have
no idea how this is going to affect.
The first election will be November 2010. We're going to see.
We'll know. Everything around. It could be so, regardless of what the people say, what the polls say, it could change everything so that we basically have nearly lost all power in our government.
And President Obama did something about that decision that some people thought was crass or unheard of. He actually spoke truth to power. He said right there with Chief Justice Roberts and Alito sitting in front of him, this is an egregious decision. He said the State of the Union address, and some people criticized him. How dare you criticize the court? What do you think you are, the President of the United States?
Well, he said the same thing about an appointee. He reaffirmed that he is looking for a justice and, in fact, you know, puts the rights of the people ahead of the rights of large corporations. I want to bring up one other point that I think is important to this discussion, because it gets into the right wing. There are a lot of people that are taught that sincerely believe that the Constitution is a sacred or divinely inspired document. Now, it's a good document. I will grant you that.
It is now.
But it is
when
not.
When it started, it had three-fifths of a person. It had slavery.
Yeah, it was kind of sloppy.
Women couldn't vote. You know, it's doing okay now.
But, I mean, there are actually religions, including the Mormon religion, which is very large and very powerful and with a great deal of money, that actually teach that this is a sacred document. Yes, sir. And that has a lot to do with the whole right-wing philosophy towards it, and therefore you don't ask questions of the Supreme Court, you don't ask questions of your justices, because this is sacred.
But, Terry, let me distinguish between the Supreme Court and the Constitution, because I have to admit, I treat the Constitution as semi-sacred. No, I don't worship
Thomas
it.
Thomas Jefferson said it was written by barbarians, and I'm quoting him.
You know what,
and he said it should be changed on a regular basis.
And I agree it should be changed on a regular
it's
basis.
It's a living document.
The best part of this Constitution is Article 5, which allows you to amend the Constitution.
But it's made so difficult, unfortunately. It's made too difficult.
But I think that we need to distinguish between the Constitution and the Supreme Court, because the Constitution, as it's written now, is something I can pretty much defend. I think it's a pretty good
document.
But the
reason I bring that up is because we're treating the Supreme Court as high priests.
Well, but that's my point, and that's what I want to distinguish between.
Yeah.
I don't think it's good politically. I don't think it's to attack
good
the
theologically.
To attack the Constitution. But attacking the five justices who aren't following the Constitution, to me, that's good politics. Go on.
And you know, people, when we hear this thing about judicial activism and the changes that have been made, people act as though the Constitution has not had drastic changes, even as how it's applied. Originally, the Bill of Rights weren't even applied to the states. You didn't have the right to freedom of speech
and
the right to against unreasonable search and seizure.
There were state religions.
Right.
Massachusetts, North Carolina had state religions.
No, originally, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, didn't apply to the states. The state government could do, they could beat, they coerced a confession out of you. And you couldn't say my constitutional rights are violated because they weren't applied. It was as a result of Supreme Court decisions that the Bill of Rights was applied, and not all of them still are applied to the states, but the majority of them were applied to the
and
states.
And you should know, too, that the original Constitution didn't even have the Bill of Rights.
So what I'm saying is this. The argument, all this crap about judicial activism... Judicial activism, to an extent, is needed, and to an extent, is what got us where we are now. In the 1920s, it was considered judicial activism, and it was the right was mad in Brown versus Mississippi. I don't know if you're familiar with that, where Brown versus Mississippi was where they decided that you couldn't have coerced confessions, where basically in Mississippi there were three young black youths who were accused of killing a white man. They took them out to a tree, and they beat them. And then they stopped and they said, are you ready to confess? And they said, no. And they said, they beat him again. We said, we'll keep beating you until you confess. They confessed. Eventually, it was upheld in Louisiana's Supreme Court.
In Louisiana. Mississippi.
And then it went to the Supreme Court. But the bottom line is, at the time, that was judicial activism. There was a lot of people on the right and in the South that were upset about this.
I'm sure they
were. Why? Because it was the state. Right. You're replying. So the bottom line is this stuff about judicial activism, to some extent, has made our country what it is.
Well, it has. And what the conservatives are still running against the judicial activists, so-called, of the 20s and 50s, who ensure that every American is treated equal under the law. But it seems to me that it's not judicial activism, because the 14th Amendment says quite clearly, and by the way, the 14th Amendment has always applied to states, I'll have you know. It says very clearly that no state, let me find it right here. No state shall deprive anyone of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny to any person the equal protection under the laws. So after the Civil War, the 14th Amendment applies to the states. And so to me, they may have considered it judicial activism, Garland, but to me, every single thing they did is justified
by
this document.
The right only reads the 10th Amendment.
Well, but that's my point. These are judges that are not respecting this document. So I agree with you, this, you know, the Constitution isn't written by God, but, you know, I don't believe the Bible was written by God either. Call me crazy. I think all these things were written by men.
And
maybe a few women.
And we will call you crazy, but that's another issue.
Yeah, that has nothing to do with this conversation whatsoever.
My point is that attacking the Constitution is kind of like attacking the flag. It's not a really good idea to do.
Well, now, wait a minute.
And it's not going to win you many friends. We can attack the Supreme Court and defend the Constitution.
We can attack the Constitution, too. It is not a sacred document.
You have the right to.
The
First Amendment says you can.
It's still a flawed
document. What would you do? How would you amend the Constitution?
For one thing, I would define the presidency. You notice you go through the whole Constitution.
Article 2, it's here.
Yeah, I know. It's the shortest little paragraph in the whole Constitution.
Yeah, not quite.
You know.
But you
it
know what?
Yes,
it is.
It's
chief.
An undefined job.
But you know what? Signs the laws.
Yeah,
but you know what, Terry?
Yeah, he doesn't do anything.
But you know what, Terry? But what you're saying, in a way, is
I also would put in term limits, because what was intended was a citizen legislature for at least the House of Representatives. It was not intended for the Senate, but for the House, it was meant to be a citizen kind of government where people were there for a short time. In fact, they only met for a few weeks during the first few years, and that some of them didn't even show up. A lot of them
I don't
didn't
think
show
you
up.
Really want to make the argument for limited government, because that's
term limits. I would say this, Terry.
Oh, you bet I do. You bet I do for term limits.
Then I would say this, Terry.
Yes, sir.
That what
nowhere
saying
in the Constitution does it say you should be a representative and that should be your career. That should be your entire life. Now, find that in the Constitution.
Did you just morph into Newt Gingrich, or am I seeing something? Oh, my God, you're changing into Newt Gingrich before my very eyes. Term limits.
One of the most. You're never going to have any progress in this Congress and this government unless you do have
what
term limits.
What I'm saying about what Terry's saying is this.
And yes, there are libertarian views that I hold and hold with pride.
Okay.
Yes. Well,
Terry's going to join the Tea Party.
You're right. Join. He's already a member. At any rate.
The Tea Party is not going to join me in impeaching. I want to impeach Robert. You guys are confused.
But I say this, because the Constitution is kind of a living document and it's morphing and it's changing.
It can be attacked.
What Terry is really saying is not attacking the Constitution from that perspective. My perspective is this.
I'm saying you have a right to. You have a First Amendment right to burn the flag.
If you're saying that there's something.
But I disagree with you.
Right. If you're saying that there's something in the Constitution that you disagree with, that you think it ought to be changed, that you think ought to be interpreted in a different way, in a way that's not really attacking the Constitution.
No, that's using the Constitution.
Right. That's what it's all about. That's what America's
exactly
all about.
Right. Fair
That's
enough.
What you do with the Constitution.
Thank you, Garland.
There we go.
No, I agree.
Okay.
If you don't
Thank you, Garland.
By the way, we do have a microphone in the center of the room. If any of you would like to ask a question or challenge us or tell Terry that he shouldn't join the Tea Party, you're welcome to get up there. And I saw your wife start to get up.
You can say almost anything you want about me, but don't say that I'm going to join the Tea Party.
You might find this interesting. Clarence Thomas's wife. Now, this was before all the
Tea Bagger?
Before all of the N-words were used and things of that nature. This was before that whole episode started. Yeah. She was in the Washington Post saying she was going to start one of the teabag chapters and promote.
I bet she said Tea Party.
Tea Party.
I doubt she said teabag.
We don't want to go there. So at any rate, she was going to start. But you know, Terry and I like to call them
the flea baggers,
Tea Klux Klan, whatever the case may be.
If you're just listening to the radio, you can't see me roll my eyes. Go ahead.
But whatever the case, so Clarence Thomas's wife actually said she agreed with the Tea Party movement and she wanted to start her own chapter and she wanted to promote it. Now, ever since the issues with the spitting and the name-calling and the N-words, I haven't heard as much from her.
I wouldn't think that
she might not want to go to the, the Second Amendment party here coming up.
So we have 15 minutes left. Let's focus on who, or not necessarily the names, because it could be any name, but what kind of person... President Obama.
He could actually hold two positions.
Think he appointed
at the same
himself?
Time?
No, oh, no, 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 no. I don't think that's
allowed. Does it say can anywhere?
No, I don't think he can do that.
Scare me.
What kind of person that President Obama should appoint? He said that he's looking outside. You know, the eight remaining justices of the Supreme Court were all on courts of appeals. They all went through the judicial route. They all are judges, and he's talking about appointing somebody outside of that. I think that's good. I'd like to see someone
outside
with real world experience.
I think the top three candidates are Solicitor General Elena Kagan.
Oh, I don't believe
Judge
that.
Merrick Garland.
That's just
Judge
the Washington
Diane
Post.
Diane Wood.
They don't know.
If Judge Merrick.
Judge Garland.
I like that. Judge Garland. That has a nice ring to it.
It's not you. If Judge Garland is appointed, and he is the most moderate of the three, if he is appointed, that means every single justice on the court is a graduate of an Ivy League school.
What's wrong with an Ivy League school? I like that.
Don't attack the Ivy League school. Mark asked, what kind of mindset? Mark talked about
Are you part of Skull and Bones?
No. They would never, and if I were, I couldn't tell you, could I?
Hey, wait a minute. But Mark talked about what type of person.
Yes, what kind of person?
Well, I think they should be short. I don't know. That just sounded good.
No, Justice Ginsburg is short, and she's a very fine judge.
What I was going to say is this. What's interesting is, if I'm not mistaken, we will have no Protestants.
I was about to say
we'll have five Roman Catholics.
Six. We have six Roman Catholics, two Jews, and zero Protestants.
We don't have any Muslims, we don't have any Hindus.
I kind of feel bad. I think we should have a Protestant on the court. It might be a good idea. I mean, they are the plurality religion in America.
One thing that's really important here, though, we should talk about to our listening audience, is this is going to come up for a vote in the Senate, as you know.
Yes.
Now, there used to be a thing where the Republicans, or I guess almost all of Congress, had actually agreed they would not filibuster on judicial appointments.
The Republicans insisted that it would be wrong and unconstitutional and evil to filibuster a Supreme Court justice.
And they said that just two years ago.
Right.
And that has basically fallen aside as a program. There are only four senators left. Republican senators who still hold to the idea that you should not filibuster, whether they will this time or not.
John McCain's one of them, I think.
I think he is. Yes, he is. But this is a time for citizens to get active again, to be talking to their senators and saying, you know, you can debate, you can vote, but do not filibuster judicial appointments. It is not appropriate. It is not needed. It is not the right thing to do.
You know what? I'm going to say something contrarian here. No, don't get me wrong. I want to see Obama's nominee.
You want term limits?
No, I knew it.
I knew you did, Mark.
I think I want to see Obama's nominee, whoever it is. I guarantee you, I'm sure I'll like him or her. I think I will. But certainly better than any Republican alternative. And I completely agree that you can't be hypocritical. You can't say if you're a Republican, don't filibuster Supreme Court nominees, and then go ahead and filibuster Supreme Court nominees. Completely hypocritical. And in fact, they did it once. They did it for Judge Fordas, who was appointed by Lyndon Johnson in 1968.
Oh, yes, sir,
the Republicans actually had a filibuster. But let me just try to speak, as I sometimes do, apart from Democrats and Republicans, and look at the principle here. You know, legislation can be changed. You can argue that you can you can filibuster legislation because I mean, if you have that you shouldn't even filibuster legislation, I should say.
Yeah, you can change it.
Because you can change it. You don't like it. The voters vote in somebody else. You can change it. A Supreme Court justice is literally a lifetime appointment.
Which is one of the things that's wrong with the Constitution.
As far as I'm concerned,
one of
the few things that I actually think, I think you can filibuster and you should be able to filibuster is a Supreme Court nominee, because I would like to see, in general, I'd like to see a Supreme Court nominee be someone who could get the votes of 60 senators. I'd like to see them in the center. Now, that's in my perfect world.
In your perfect world,
unfortunately,
sure.
We have such a far right-wing court that doesn't represent the middle of America that we got to put a bunch of liberals on just to write it. I mean, if we replace Stevens with another liberal, that changes nothing. Right?
That's right. It's still 5-4.
That's right. We
every time
around. So we have to wait till Scalia dies. But in general, as
not that we're wishing anything like
that.
No. Go ahead if you feel the need
speak
to.
Speak for yourself if not wishing. You know.
Yeah, you can go ahead and die if you want to. It's okay. I mean, we'll let you go.
I mean, if a truck backed over
that's
tomorrow.
That's okay. It's okay.
I mean, hey, you know, things happen.
Yeah, right. No problem.
In any case.
As the mafia says, things happen.
You know, I actually supported.
Shame on us.
As did President Obama, I supported filibustering Justice Alito, because I thought he was way out of the mainstream, and I felt that justice of the Supreme Court, I think above all, should be in the middle.
You were a Harriet Myers man.
Harriet Myers was unqualified, but I would have preferred to see her over Justice Alito, absolutely.
Well, probably, yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there's no question. There's no question.
But, absolutely. You know, in a sense, that's exactly what Bush did politically, and I think Obama will do the same thing. Is Harriet Myers was put up first because they knew she wasn't going to get approved.
No, they didn't.
Yes, they did.
I think George Bush actually thought she was a good choice.
She was a good friend of his.
She represented his Texas ranch.
Forgive me,
she was a tool. And I mean that, you know, not condemning her, but in the political
situation.
You
can condemn her.
Come on, I know guys that worked in that White House. Trust me.
They're
not nice people. Yes, I do.
Wait.
Yeah.
You don't have friends that worked in the Bush White House.
Clarence Thomas, Teabagger. It's all starting to add up, Mark.
What do they do, roll over? Did they run over you in their limousine?
No.
He's a mole.
I think he is. Exactly. How did you know people in the Bush White House?
I don't really want to go into
that.
Oh,
no!
I knew it!
Aha! Proof!
But
we got it.
The point is, he's not talking. No, but the point.
If we waterboard you, will you tell us?
Yes, but the point is, I did take them on, as a matter of fact, and we dissociated friendship strictly because of what I knew they were doing in the White House, primarily because of the torture memos,
right?
Mm-hmm. And because of the district attorneys that they think. Well, I know people that were directly involved in that. I know they believe to this day they were.
I know the guy who wrote the torture memos.
I'll give you their names and we can go lynch. No,
I knew the guy who wrote the torture memos. I think I've talked about this before. I actually went to law school.
Which one?
With John Yu. I was.
Oh
in
yeah.
Classes
well, I know the other one.
Oh,
now. What's his name?
And I used to
Bybee.
You knew Bybee?
Oh yeah.
Well, I used to argue with him in law school, and I can say this on the air.
You lost, obviously.
He was a tool then, and he's
a
tool now.
So's Bybee. It's unbelievable. Bybee's now a district judge, too, a big district judge. Nice
but we're getting off point. What kind of person, what kind of man or woman, what kind of person should President Obama choose as the next Supreme Court justice? What kind of person do they have to believe in?
What you should have, you know, in the ideal world, and that's all we can speak of, is the same thing you would hope of a juror, that they can put aside preconceived ideas, that they can put aside prejudices, that they can put aside what they think in this situation without really studying it might be the best, if they cannot react emotionally. In other words, if they can be absolutely...
A good judge.
A good judge, as objective as possible, without ideology.
Garland.
No,
I wouldn't even say without ideology. We all have ideology, but you need to put it aside if you're going to make judgments.
Now let's get back to reality.
Because, go ahead,
no, but you know, what you're saying is true. That's what we would like to be. Yeah. That was what we'd like to have, ideally, in a juror. And
but we should not say to him, you can't have an ideology. Right. That's absurd.
But
the question is, can you put it aside?
But having spent as many hours in court as I have and sat there, and you know,
rap sheet is not the issue here.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean,
you know, I got off most of the time. Yeah. But they called me the Teflon, whatever. But at any rate, when you watch attorneys voir dire the jurors, they know they're not going to get people who are completely non-biased, so they look for people that will be sympathetic towards their client. Voir dire meaning basically they go through the jurors and they ask them questions and they strike the jurors. People might know what that means. They strike the jurors that they don't want. It's the same kind of thing here.
Which can
actually
leave blood all over the jurors if they strike them.
Yeah, but it's the same thing. What we're looking at is that someone, from my perspective, just like an attorney would do, you weed through them and you find someone that will be sympathetic to your particular client or ideology in this case, but yet still have somewhat of a reasonable open mind.
Let me go one step further. If you are playing a sporting event and you know that the referee, you would like to have fair referees who call it as they see it. That's what you would like. That's what Terry said.
Except for rugby, because I don't like rugby.
I agree. That's the best of all possible worlds. But we don't have that right now. We have got severe ideologues. We have a guy in the name of Antonin Scalia who will throw this Constitution out the window and burn it rather than let a poor person get justice in America. He will destroy the Constitution rather than allow a corporation to be regulated, rather than to follow its words. We've got a whole bunch of biased referees. And I got to tell you something. When the scale is heavily weighted, the judicial scale is on one side, you got to throw a bunch of rocks in the other side just to try to get it even. If you're doing a sporting event and you got three referees that are in the pay of the opposing team, you need a couple
need
referees
on your own
in the pay of the home team.
But
now,
if
I don't like it
that
way. I don't like it that way.
Why should we be fair? We want an ideologue too, darn it.
Until
the court hell with principles. That's right. Yeah, to hell with principles.
If,
we don't need them.
If we play fair and straight line by the rules,
right,
and we don't have a strong liberal
on that
court,
we got to do what they do. Yeah,
and they have a strong ideologue, where the middle of the court will be center right.
Yeah, in the first
and
place,
I want the middle of the court to be center.
In the first place, you'll never get anybody like that passed through the Congress. You know, it simply won't happen. You've still got
a liberal?
You
will.
No, you won't. No, you won't.
I'm not talking about a leftist. Maybe you and I have different definitions of liberal. You can definitely get a liberal for this Congress.
You can't throw away your principles on this situation. You've got to elect a moderate. You've got to appoint a moderate. You've got to have some faith in their ability.
Terry, who's inhabited
moderate.
Your body?
Oh, my gosh.
Is this the Terry doppelganger here? Terry, we must have a moderate Kester?
Mark, we've got to take to the streets against this
who
guy.
Who is he? We have to take to the streets and depose this tyrant.
Yes.
Who is this guy?
I don't know who he is.
But maybe, I don't know.
It's time to wrap up or I give my clue again.
This guy wants moderation. We got to get out of
here. Who are you and what have you done with Terry Kester?
I don't know.
At any rate.
He'll be here next week. Don't worry about it.
Radio host or something.
I want to thank our terrific engineer, Drew Franklin, who works very, very hard to get
Drew, thank you.
I want to thank T. Sturdivant, who's sitting there at home at WPFW, working the boards, making it all happen. And I want
to
thank, above all, Gladys Brooks, sitting
here,
our producer, makes everything work. I got to thank, of course, Nizam Ali. He's the one who lets us be here at Bed
Every
Next
Tuesday.
Door.
See you next week.
Every Tuesday at 7 p.m. He's the reason we're here. And
besides that, the fact that we have a lot to
last
say.
Last words. How can they find you, Terry?
They can find us at our website, which is right there on the flyer. What
RCNDC, www.rcndc.com.
Yes.
I know that you can Facebook all three of
Garland
us.
Garland Nixon. Yes.
Mark Levine, MarkLevine.
K-E-S-T-E-R.
You can watch all my appearances on everything.
And next week, I think I may be able to drag a Congress member. So I think, get down here next week.
Oh, we're going
to
drag a Congress member.
I may be able to drag a Congress member
next week. Pickup truck or what?
I don't know what it'll be
yet. How is this going to happen?
Next week,
I'm
going to be gone.
Escort.
I am very proud to say I will be
You're
gone.
You're getting an escort for a congressman?
Moving on. I'm going to be gone next week. I'm going to miss all of you. I am actually receiving an honor, an award.
from the Gay Lesbian Activist Alliance for my work in promoting and drafting DC marriage equality.
Congratulations, Mark. Yes.
I'm very proud of that. So I will not be here next week, but I assure you.
You didn't invite us. Why can't we come?
You can come, but you got a radio show to do, Terry.
Oh, okay.
Did you forget that?
Yeah, I was.
It's called the Raucous Caucus.
I'll
and it's
be here.
Every
I'll send
Tuesday
the real
at
Terry
7
Kester.
At Ben's Next Door.
Okay.
I thought you would know about that. Are we done, Gladys? We are done.
Oh, we're off the air.
Thank you so much. Goodbye. Until next week.